Forget about trotting onto riverboats to try your luck. The new frontier when it comes to gambling in Iowa is online. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, the evolving regulation of online gaming and how it may help or hinder the state's gaming industry. We'll hear from Iowa Racing and Gaming Commissioner Jeff Lamberti, also State Senator Tom Courtney, and Professor of Psychiatry Donald Black with his latest research on gaming. Do you visit Iowa's casinos? Do you gamble online? Share your experiences this hour. We'll start right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Over the years, many of us have trotted onto riverboats to try our luck. But when it comes to gambling in Iowa, the new frontier is online. Perhaps you've tried that out. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by one of the most noted researchers on pathological gambling, Professor of Psychiatry Donald Black. He recently completed a study examining whether the increase in the number of casinos in Iowa creates a higher number of gamblers in the general population. Are there more problem gamblers in our population because we have more casinos? We'll find that out in the next half hour. First, the future of the gambling industry in Iowa and how the evolving regulation of online gaming may help or hinder the state's gaming industry. And joining us for this first half hour to look at that, Jeff Lamberti is in our Des Moines studio. He is the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commissioner. Jeff Lamberti, welcome.
Well, thanks. Happy to be here.
You are a mentioned, for those who don't know, you're a former two-term Republican state senator from Ankeny, also a practicing attorney as well. Joining us also by phone, Tom Courtney, a three-term Democratic state senator from Burlington. Senator Courtney, are you there?
I am. Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for joining us. Let's just start off so we can kind of lay a foundation here. Jeff Lamberti, let's put it to you this way. If you were to describe to a visitor from another state who knows next to nothing about our gambling history, the evolution of gambling in Iowa, how would you describe it up to the present, how we've arrived where we are and where we are?
Well, it's been quite an evolution. When we originally started with gambling in Iowa, it was restricted to riverboats, and that was a lot of what it was sold on in terms of kind of the nostalgia, the historic doing it on the rivers. In fact, there were not only was it limited to the rivers, but there were limits on what you could bet. There were limits on what you could lose per day, and the riverboats actually had to go out and make excursions. Mm-hmm. So that's where we started in Iowa, and now I would probably call us much more of a traditional gambling venue in terms of our facilities. While we still have riverboats, we've gone to a lot more land-based casinos with a lot of amenities, entertainment venues, good restaurants, those kind of things. So it's really evolved from where it started with the riverboats to a much more modern type of environment with a lot of amenities.
I have noted here 21 casinos in Iowa currently?
I believe that is correct.
Mm-hmm. So tell me then, in this evolution, the latest chapter, what does online gaming represent?
Well, I think it, it's opportunity and risk as well. Opportunity in that it does appear that that's where this is moving. They made a significant change in a federal ruling, which is in all likelihood going to open this up. And so lots of states are looking to get into the internet gaming issue. So from that perspective, it could be an opportunity for tax revenue and business growth and so forth. But it also presents some risk in that we've got, operators in this state who have invested millions of dollars in their facilities. And so what is the impact on those facilities of people being able to gamble at home? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of unknown, and we're all watching it very closely. But what I would say is probably true is that is going to become a significant player in the whole gaming world. And so as a state, we better be prepared for that.
Okay, so worried from your point of view about that online gaming siphoning off the revenue that in the meantime, over $100 million the state benefits?
Yeah, and that's just the state component. That doesn't take into account the local nonprofits, the property taxes, the other things that are paid in the communities, the jobs, et cetera. So, yeah, certainly concerned about that, and we're also concerned about where will it be regulated and how will it be regulated.
Okay, River to River listeners, we want to reach out to you to get you in on this conversation in the first half hour talking about the gambling industry and specifically the evolution into online gaming. Have you been gambling and have your habits changed to online gaming as that's become more popular? Join our conversation, your comments, your questions, your experiences. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Senator Tom Courtney, explain your view of gambling in Iowa. We've kind of had a fast forward through the evolution of it in Iowa from Commissioner Lamberti. You are not the biggest fan of gambling,
well,
right?
I want to say hi to Senator Lamberti. We work together in the Senate, and I have a lot of respect for him and his views. And I think he's doing a great job where he's at. And I just, my feeling on gambling is this. I'm not a big fan of gambling, but I've always supported gambling in Iowa because every time it's been taken to the taxpayers say that they, the majority of the taxpayers say that they want gambling in Iowa, and I'm here to serve the people, and if that's what they want, that's fine with me. There is a facility. I'm in Burlington here. There's a facility here, a small facility, and there's a facility not too far from me in Riverside, and so they're around. But the history of gambling in Iowa, as Senator Lamberti said, is that when it started, when it began, it was a riverboat excursion. There were bands and dancing and meals, and you cruise the river. And oh, by the way, you could gamble a little while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the limits were $200, and for a long time. You couldn't go to an ATM. You had to get off the boat and walk a couple of blocks to use an ATM to get more money and all those kind of things. And I don't know if I agree with those. In my view,
wasn't that sort of a fig leaf in many ways?
Exactly. At the time, I think Governor Branstad was governor then as well, and I think he was somewhat opposed to it. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think others were opposed to it. And this was a way to kind of have your cake and eat it, too, to have gambling in Iowa but not. We were no threat to Las Vegas, let me put it that way. Well, then as the years went by and they put more and more money in their facilities, they wanted more freedom. And the cruises were cost them a lot of money. That was a tough thing to do. And so eventually we took the limits off. Eventually we eliminated the cruising thing. And it got to the old one other thing. They had to take a vote every 8 or 10 years to renew their license in each facility. And the public could vote against that. That never happened, but they had several votes. They didn't like the voting. I didn't like the voting. They couldn't plan for the future. It was hard to get business loans because it was always an 8 or 10 year cycle before they could be put out of business again. So we did away with that just a few years ago. We did away with the cruise requirement, and then they had to be in water, and some put them in a pool of water. We finally did away with that, I think, in 2007. So now their casinos are just like everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my addition to the history in Iowa. And I'm not a big fan of gambling, but as I say, I do support them. And I think I've always been on the yes side of most of those votes because it's what the people of Iowa have wanted all the time.
Senator Courtney, we don't have the best sound quality from you over the phone. If there's a way to speak more directly into the phone, or perhaps it's on speakerphone and you could change that would be great. I wonder, Senator Courtney, Jeff Lamberti mentioned the opportunities and the risks posed by online gaming. What do you see as the risks, the opportunities there?
Well, I hope you can hear me now.
There you go.
This is an old phone, but at any rate, the online gambling. I don't think we have a choice. There are people in Iowa who are online gambling now. They're doing it now, and the state's not getting any of that revenue, and they're doing it now. So I don't think it's a matter of allowing it in Iowa. I think it's a matter of whether we're going to get some of that income.
We want some of that action.
Exactly. And what the casinos have talked about and what some of those folks have talked about is if we're going to do it, perhaps we could do it like the casino might have a card, a player's card, if you will. And you would go there and say, all right, here's $500. I want $500 credit on a player's card. Then you could take it home or anywhere to a PC and sit down and play until that credit was gone. The way it's done in some states now, you can sit down at your home computer with a with a credit card, a MasterCard or a Visa or what have you, and you can gamble until you're out of money. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody really wants that to happen here. But I think this player's card might be a way to go. The casino would get some take off of that, and the taxpayers would get some take because of that.
Okay.
So that's what I think we would see here possibly.
Let's throw that over to Jeff Lamberti to expand on.
Yeah, and I think the other side of that is the concern about how it's regulated, the integrity, and, you know, right now there's, you know, a lot of these are offshore and there's not a lot of guarantee of integrity or regulation. And so in addition to making sure that the state and the facilities are getting their share or their piece of this, is making sure that if people in Iowa are going to gamble online, that they have the same level of integrity that they do if they're walking into one of our casinos. You know, we, mm-hmm. as a commission, and that's been true from the beginning of gambling in Iowa, we've always taken very seriously as our top priority to make sure there's a lot of integrity and that the people, the citizens, can rely on it. And so with this whole internet gambling moving into the forefront, I think regulation and integrity are real serious questions, and then it becomes who's going to regulate it. Is it going to be the state? There are some efforts at the national level for the feds to take this over. I think most people who are state regulators or in the lottery business or some of those would prefer that it stay in the state so that we get, you know, that the revenue's derived here and that we can regulate it here to protect the integrity for our citizens.
Two questions to follow up with you, Commissioner Lamberti. On that player's card alternative or suggestion there, what's preventing me as someone who wants to gamble online from, if you have this player's card situation, from bypassing that, just going the traditional way that I've always known online? It is a little bit more of a, you know, to go somewhere, to pay money, to get a card, come back, and then play in your own home is a little bit more of an effort. I can imagine you need some penalties there to prevent people from doing that. How are you going to do it?
Well, and I think you do, because, you know, in effect, you're trading, making sure you have good integrity. So if you're, for example, playing and you happen to win, you don't have to worry about getting paid because it is regulated by the state. And the other thing we have to worry about, and why we do want a certain level of regulation here, is trying to come up with ways to control underage gaming. You know, if you walk into a casino, we have cameras everywhere. We have security people everywhere. We can pretty well control the age issue. With internet gaming, particularly in today's environment, there's not a lot of regulation of age. If you have to go and you sign up and there's a system, I think we can do a lot better job of controlling that. That is certainly one of the major challenges that's going to face the whole area of internet gambling.
Mm-hmm. So if you're 18 in the state, you're good to go for gambling, right?
Yeah, I believe it is. I should know this as a commissioner. Or is it 21? But, yeah, we regulate it very strictly. And you know, people still do get by, but I got to tell you, our facilities do a great job of stopping that. But like I said, you walk into a facility, you're on camera, uh-huh. there's security people stopping you. We've got to make sure if the commission is given the responsibility for regulating internet gambling, that we're going to do as good a job on that as we do in the actual facilities.
Did you have that fact, by the way, on hand, whether it is 18 or 21?
It's 18.
It's 18. So once you're an adult, you're good to go. Okay. But back to this. So the incentive to using a player's card alternative, you go to a casino, buy some money, get a card, come back to your computer to play online. The incentive is that you don't have to worry about getting paid. How much of a problem is that for online gamers if they win, that they might not get paid or there might be a delay? Do we know?
You know, I'm not sure we have a great handle on that, and some of this has exploded in recent years. I know there have been some concerns and complaints, and that there's just it's kind of the Wild West right now out there. And that's where I think people in all states and certainly at the federal level as well are saying, you know, there are reasons this should have a little more control so that we don't have those kind of concerns. I don't think anybody's looking, you know, if gambling's going to move to the internet, which it clearly is, I don't think anybody would be trying to create a system that would be a great impediment to doing it. It's simply making sure that there's a high level of integrity and that we're keeping out, you know, underage and those kind mm-hmm. of things. And that's where I think there is some belief that if you let the people who are currently running our facilities, who have been in the gambling business for a long time, they know what they're doing, and that they will make that gaming experience what people expect when they walk inside a casino as well, that there's a high level of integrity.
I believe that's true, and as we looked at it on the oversight committee, when we looked at it a few years ago, we found that there most of these outfits that were offshore paid off because they want repeat business, and if they got a reputation of not paying off, that'd be the end of the repeat business. So we understood that wasn't a big problem offshore. But the one other thing that I wanted to say is there's also in Iowa, in the code, we allow people to opt out of gambling. You can sign a list and say I don't want to be allowed in a casino. That's a lifetime ban. I'm not sure how we handle that on online gambling, and that's another issue that I believe
A lifetime ban would be for people who were gambling addicts.
You can, whatever reason, they can go down and sign up for this lifetime ban, and you. I won't say you can't get in the casino because you could get missed going in the door. But if you win much of a prize, then your name, they're going to know you won, and you won't get that payout if you're on that self ban list. So that's another issue that I think will be here.
Just to avoid any confusion, back to where we were a couple of moments ago, our team looked this up. It is, in fact, 21.
Oh,
21 the age, according to the Iowa code. And that matches up with online gaming nationwide, 21 as well.
I stand corrected. I thought it was 18 in Iowa.
Okay. I wonder, Senator Courtney, if you feel, when you look into the future and see this evolution of gambling in the state, do you see that we have enough protections for people with pathological gambling problems, protections that prevent minors, those under 21, from gambling?
Well, I don't know if you ever have enough. I think we're working really hard at it, and I think the folks that do that are doing a really good job. I'd go to casinos, and I look around, and I think they're doing a really good job. The people that are trying to gamble underage, some of them are pretty good at it, and so I won't say some won't get through. But I don't think we can ever say we have enough protections. But I think we're going down that road to make it. These people are pretty darn careful about who they let in and following every rule.
Okay, but before we have to go, I want to get Jeff Lamberti's view and your view, Senator Courtney, on this May 7th of this year. Voters in Linn County will determine if a new casino can come to Cedar Rapids via a special election. Now, opponents of that Cedar Rapids casino, some of them say the casino will take too much business from other casinos in the area. You mentioned in your area, Senator Courtney, the one in Burlington, also in Riverside, just in North Washington County, just south of Johnson County. What are your concerns, Commissioner Lamberti, on this one?
Well, of course, the referendum is the first step in the process, and certainly any, county is able to do that. And so if they do that, at that point it really becomes kind of a ripe issue for the commission to consider, because at that point they will follow it up with a formal application. What we consider are some of the things you've talked about: the impact on the existing facilities, is there additional room for growth, what's it mean to the local community. And so there's a process that's been followed in the past that will be followed again, where we do some market studies and we do look at that. But certainly the impact on our existing facilities is important, because we've got people who've invested millions of dollars into those facilities, and we certainly cannot expect them to become nonprofit operations. That's not how it's structured in Iowa. So that is a very significant part of that. But the studies haven't been done on particular areas for some time, so that'd be one of the first steps that we would take.
Tom Courtney, as a state senator from Burlington, you must be concerned about another casino popping up in the Cedar Rapids.
Not just because I live in Burlington, we have a casino, but I know it's very enticing to these communities to try to get more gambling in. I believe this state's saturated with enough gambling. I believe that any more will hurt the existing ones, and I believe that we have enough. And I know that they all have a right for a referendum to see that. But I would hope that it would never get past that stage, and that it would never be approved in Iowa. I just think this 3 million people that live in this small state, I think we're saturated with.
Well, how do we know what is saturated?
There was a study done a couple of years ago, and I don't. Maybe Senator Lamberti knows who did that, but I saw a study a couple of years ago that some folks that do this all the time say that they feel we're pretty close to saturated. in this state as well. You remember the border cities, you know, there's casinos in across the border in Missouri, casinos across the border in Nebraska, and casinos across the border in Illinois. So we have a lot of competition from the borders too. And it just seems to me, and I have to agree with those folks that did that study, that we're saturated.
Mm-hmm. Give us a sense, Commissioner Lamberti, of how our neighboring states, we just mentioned across the border, play into this for you. How do you take those into account when considering a new casino or gambling rules and regulations in the state?
Yeah, we take that into account a lot because it does impact. You know, we've got a lot of our facilities are in the border communities, so we have to watch what's going on in the other states. How that impacts what we're attempting to do here, both from a regulatory standpoint and a growth standpoint. You know, I take, for example, the situation we've got going on in Davenport, where we'd like to move from a boat to a land-based facility. Well, we're not just doing that in isolation. We're doing it because we have a fairly new facility that was built across the river in Illinois. We're also considering what's the likelihood of some additional licenses in Illinois. And so it becomes a market share issue, which impacts both the local community, the nonprofit in the local community, as well as the state of Iowa. So we have to be attuned to what's going on in the rest of the world, particularly in the border states, because, you know, bottom line, it does affect the state of Iowa in terms of revenue and those local communities. So we do try to follow very closely what's going on in the states surrounding us.
If my facts are correct, gambling legalized in Iowa for the first time in 1975. The state lottery introduced 85, riverboat casinos 89. There's a whole bunch of other milestones there. But let's look into the future very quickly in a couple minutes or less. Jeff Lamberti, 10 years from now, what is your best guess as a vision of gambling in Iowa?
Well, I think you certainly will see a lot of it being online. My hope is that we still have very viable facilities that continue to grow and add more amenities and become entertainment destinations. I think that's where we're heading.
But you see online as a danger, as a real risk for our land and riverboat-based casinos?
Could be. I think, like I said before, risk and opportunity.
Tom Courtney, the last word to you, please.
Well, I think that the casinos see it as a risk. I'm not sure that it is. I believe that I agree with Senator Lamberti. I believe that that will happen. I believe there'll be more online gambling. I'd like to see our casinos be destination family entertainment places too. But I believe there'll be more online gambling, and I just hope we can regulate it so that it's fair and equal for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Lamberti, do you gamble?
No, as a commissioner, well, let me take this back. As a commissioner, we do not gamble in any facility we regulate. I'm allowed to gamble.
You have gambled.
I've gambled.
You know the appeal of gambling, right?
Oh, sure.
Okay, good. Tom Courtney, what about you?
I don't gamble. I have gambled, but I don't. No one builds those big fancy casinos by losing, and so I don't go in there and do that very often, but I have.
Okay. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Iowa Racing and Gaming Commissioner Jeff Lamberti in our Des Moines studio, joining us by phone, Democratic State Senator from Burlington, Tom Courtney. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue our discussion about gambling with we'll talk with a professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. Does a lot of research in this area, especially in the area of pathological gambling. When it creates a problem for an individual, for a family. Perhaps you have a story to share along these lines. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Donald Black will be with us. Professor Donald Black has some new research to share about gambling. When we come back, this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're talking about the state of gambling in our state. Last half hour, if you were with us, we discussed the state of gambling industry in Iowa, where that's headed to with online gambling. This half hour, we want to focus on individuals who gamble. You, perhaps, and you could join our conversation. And when gambling can become a real problem, the pathology of compulsive gambling. Donald Black is with us in our Iowa City studio. He's a professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa, specializing in, among other things, pathological gambling, correctional psychiatry, and obsessive compulsive disorder. A recent study He put out, examines whether the increase in the number of casinos in Iowa creates a higher number of problem gamblers among the general population in our state. Professor Donald Black, welcome back to our program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the study, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the nature of a gambling addiction when people have problems. People often say, I have an addiction to gambling. Is that the correct word even to use for it?
Well, there are a lot of terms for it. Some people say it's an addiction. Some people say it's a compulsion. And in fact, our psychiatric profession is just revising its diagnostic manual. And for that new manual called DSM-5 that's coming out next May, what we call pathological gambling is being renamed gambling disorder, and it's being called a behavioral addiction, and it will be classified with the substance use disorders like alcoholism and drug abuse.
Mm, so we find it very much akin to those.
And this is really based on research done over the past 10 or 20 years showing that what gambling does in an individual's brain is very similar to what alcoholism or drug abuse will do to that individual's brain in terms of turning on certain brain circuits.
Mm-hmm. And so it turns on these circuits, fosters and nurtures them, makes them stronger?
Absolutely. It essentially activates certain reward networks in the brain, and other behaviors do as well. And anything that is very exciting or rewarding or interesting will activate these circuits, and that's why people get a surge of pleasure and excitement. Mm-hmm. And that tends to fuel the problem because it builds on itself.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things in reading about this that men on average cross the line into compulsive gambling at the age of 34, women at 39. Why are these 30s, that demographic, the decade when this pathology manifests itself? What do we know about that? Not the 20s, not the 40s or 50s, but the 30s.
Well, age of onset is very interesting. And if you ask male gamblers when they start gambling, it's usually in the teens or at least by the early 20s. But they've established a problem with gambling by their 30s. So it's quite an extended process. Now, what's interesting is that women start gambling later in life, but they develop problem gambling a lot faster. So we call that process in the field of psychiatry and psychology telescoping. So we see this phenomenon in women who develop alcohol or drug addiction as well, that they start later, but they catch up with men faster. So their course is collapsed or telescoped.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the percentage of people gambling who were women, it's far less than men. Pathological gambling is primarily a man's disorder.
Mm-hmm. We probably should have you remind us, what does it mean to have a problem with gambling? Where is the line crossed? Is that also similar to alcoholism?
Well, as a researcher, we have very specific definitions, which I won't get into. But the fact of the matter is someone who is addicted to gambling is preoccupied with gambling, wants to engage in the behavior frequently, finds it difficult to stop the gambling behavior. And so what I see, and I do clinical trials, I'm not doing any right now, but I've done them over the years, is that people come in and say, you know, I go to Riverside all the time. I can't get away. Some of them stay overnight, and I'm not particularly interested in gambling. I do gamble from time to time, and I just find it hard to understand what would keep someone in a casino all night.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to ask them about their behavior within a casino. Well, what do you do? Well, most of them play slots, particularly the women. Younger guys tend to like the action games, the table games, cards, craps, roulette. And this is very stereotyped. The women almost always go towards the slot machines. So I'll ask them, well, you know, do you have a favorite machine? They always have a favorite machine. well, what's special about that machine? Well, they think they've got an edge. They're going to win. And it's all very random. So I call that magical thinking, that people develop these ideas about gambling. You know, they have an edge with a certain machine, or, you know, if they're playing craps, a certain table, and it's just all nonsense.
Mm-hmm. It is all nonsense. There are people, though, who come out on the winning end and game the system, counting cards or whatever, don't they?
Well, with certain games like poker, for example, if you're very skilled at that, you may have an edge over most people. Something like slots is totally, completely random. The person has no control whatsoever.
Let's talk about the latest study, finding a greater number of casinos not creating a greater number of problem, pathological gamblers. Tell us about the study and more on what you found.
Okay, well, this goes way back. I've been thinking about this for many, many years. As I've watched the gambling industry in Iowa expand, and you, in the last half hour, you went over the timeline for the introduction of gambling in Iowa, starting in 1974 with bingo and expanding to where we are now. We have 21 casinos. Three are owned by Indian tribes, but the others are state supported. And so I've wondered, as we have increased the number of casinos, do we have more and more people addicted to gambling? And early studies seem to show that was true. The state of Iowa commissioned surveys in 1989, before we had casino gambling, and 1995, and by that time I think we had seven or eight casinos, and the percentage of people addicted to gambling went from 0.1% to 1.9%. So that is a huge increase. So I thought, okay, now it's, you know, we're in 2010, and we have 21 casinos. That's far greater than seven or eight casinos. Shouldn't that number of problem gamblers continue to have climbed? So, you know, maybe now we have a huge number of problem gamblers. And I had an opportunity to look at this. I've been looking at the genetics of gambling, and in the course of that study, it's called a family study of pathological gambling, I collected essentially survey data, just probability data from the general population of Iowa. And we looked at the figure, and it was for pathological gambling in 2010, it was 1.4%. So again, 89, 0.1%, 1995, 1.9%. And 2010, 1.4%.
A dip.
So if anything, it went down.
How do you interpret that?
Well, it's interesting. A colleague at Harvard named Howard Schaefer, say a psychologist, he's a PhD, a very bright man, and he's been thinking about gambling for a long time. And he said it's due to the fact that when gambling is introduced in an area, that there's great novelty and interest in it. And people go to the casinos, a certain percent will become addicted to gambling, and then the novelty wears off. And so you add more casinos to the mix, and it's just not novel, and you're not attracting more and more people. And so that kind of segues to the idea of whether or not the market is saturated, because that had been brought up in the last half hour.
Right. We're talking about the people in Linn County will be voting on whether they think they should get a casino here, and then it would be passed on to the commissioner we talked to last half hour. You have a view on this?
Well, I mean, my view is, whatever happened to the idea of free enterprise? So here in Iowa City, if I wanted to open a grocery store and another grocery store happened to be a few blocks away from the lot that I had identified to build a grocery store, as far as I know, I'd be allowed to open the store. and the other store would probably object, and rightly so, but that's how the system works. Mm-hmm. Some enterprises are going to succeed, others are going to fail. That is the history of our country. So when I hear people talk about worrying about whether Riverside or other places are going to lose business, to me that's whining.
Right. I suppose it has to do with the state having, when compared to a grocery store, they do get sales tax from a grocery mm-hmm. store, property taxes
sure.
too. But it has to do with the state having a larger stake in this, and so they want to do what they can to ensure success.
This is the slippery slope of having introduced gambling in the first place, because as we've seen, the state just keeps ratcheting up the amount of gambling. And where is it going to end? Are we going to have casinos in every town in Iowa? Is the state going to be completely dependent on what I see as a regressive tax? Because if you look at the population of people who gamble, it's not people in higher income brackets, it's people in lower income brackets. So some people might say that it's a regressive tax.
Your study, you surveyed, let's talk a little bit more about the details of your study. I understand over 300 Iowa residents about their gambling activity
yes.
using something called the South Oaks Gambling Screen.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Is it called SOGS?
The SOGS. Yeah,
we use
that in research.
Okay. Tell us about SOGS and what people are presented with when they look at this SOGS screen.
Well, it's just a series of questions about gambling behavior. It's not a diagnostic instrument. We use other scales for that. But it's an excellent screener to administer to people to see whether or not there might be a problem. And basically, if someone has any type of problem with gambling, they'll achieve a score on it. So if you get zero on this, it doesn't mean that you don't gamble. It means that you have no gambling-related problems. And generally, for research, we define problem gambling as a score of 3 or more. So you or I might take this instrument and get a score of 0 or 1 on it. A problem gambler would get 3 or higher. Someone who we say has pathological gambling, that is a diagnosable case, would have a score of 5 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the pathological gamblers I include in my research on the SOGS, they generally get over 12. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have all kinds of problems.
So we're sitting across from each other in the studio. If you wanted to find it out in short order with some of these questions, if I had the potential to become a pathological gambler, what would be the questions you'd aim at me?
Well, I don't have the SOGS in front of me, but just thinking off the top of my head, you know, how often do you gamble? How much do you spend? Are you able to leave the casino, after losing some money? Do you have to go back to win it? If you've lost money, do you have to go back to try to win it back?
Mm-hmm.
Has it caused arguments within the family? Do you have money problems because of your gambling? Have you had job-related problems? You know, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What are the signs that you can tell us, red flags, that someone's a potential problem gambler, that someone listening or a loved one of someone listening, they should be alerted and say, well, there's time to have some intervention perhaps?
Well, one of the things that highly correlates with pathological gambling is chasing one's losses. That is, you lose, and then you have to go back to try to win it back.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably now you've actually figured out, learned a lesson, or so the person thinks, that you won't be fooled again or make the same mistake again?
I guess so. I think that's part of the thinking process, but in fact, most all gambling is totally random anyway, and as was mentioned in the last half hour, casinos wouldn't be in business if they didn't have the edge.
Right.
The casino always wins; the individual always loses. Now that's a gross exaggeration, because if you gamble enough, you're going to be winning a certain percentage of the time. Otherwise, you would lose interest in gambling real fast, and you would not go back. So you have to win at least some of the time. Otherwise, no one would gamble at all.
And the people who run casinos, who create,
and they
design
know,
it,
they
know that edge, that you're walking along, yeah?
Sure. I mean, that's how they design the slot machines, so they'll win, the individual will win a certain percentage of times.
What is that percentage?
I don't know. They apparently can vary that from machine to machine and casino to casino. And, you know, if you go to Las Vegas and compare the casinos, and I go there every year to, believe it or not, for problem gambling-related meetings. Mm-hmm. And some places will advertise themselves as having loose slots, meaning that they set that percentage of wins at a higher rate than other casinos, presumably to attract more business.
Mm-hmm. So you've gone to casinos in Las Vegas or
sure.
maybe here
mm-hmm.
in Iowa with problem right. gamblers to scientifically observe them and quiz them as they're gambling?
No, these are just professional meetings.
But
I can tell you that any time you go to a casino and watch people, a certain percentage will be problem or pathological gamblers. And you can almost tell because they seem, at least as I observe people when I'm in casinos, that these people are so interested in what they're doing. They're basically in their own zone.
Mm. Now, the state with the gambling proceeds, some of them go to problem gambling prevention here.
That's true.
Now, do you see that the state is doing an adequate job of putting resources there so that we get out the bad and just have people who can gamble reasonably a pleasurable experience?
Well, I'll put it this way. Iowa does better than most all states, and that's to Iowa's credit. In fact, the Iowa Gamblers Treatment Program, which is supported by the state, is considered a model in the rest of the country because there are a lot of states with a lot of gambling and they do absolutely nothing for problem gamblers. So this is a state-supported program. People can call 1-800-BETS-OFF. If people call me or email me, that's what I tell them to do. It's a free program, trained therapists, and I think it's a great thing. But I think the legislators, and maybe there's some listening to me now, ought to understand that fewer than 10% of problem gamblers ever seek help. So I've heard some legislators say that we don't have much of a problem with problem gambling because the statistics put out by the Gamblers Treatment Program show that relatively few people need to seek help. And that's completely and absolutely misleading because very few people seek help.
Mm. Back to becoming a pathological or problem gambler, if it's not the number of casinos that encourages problem gamblers, the number of problem gamblers, what is it? Is it genetics? What do we know about that?
Well, it's very interesting because I'm wrapping up this genetic study now, and it clearly runs in families at rates that I think when my paper comes out will just absolutely totally amaze people. It runs in families, but gambling is a social construct. No one would inherit gambling behavior. So what is it behind it? Well, it's a behavior that really relies on a person's impulsive nature. So it's probably certain personality traits or characteristics, impulsivity being the best example of that, that's probably inherited. And then within the environment, the person learns to gamble. Because a lot of people have told me that they learn to gamble as kids, watching their parents play cards, or the parents would go to casinos and the kids would know about this or observe it.
Mm-hmm. You talked early, and we only have a minute or so left, about it being in the same category as, for instance, alcoholism.
Yes.
Something like that. So what would be a key difference between an addiction to gambling and alcoholism?
the presence of a substance. So that's why we call gambling a behavioral addiction, because it has to do with an uncontrolled behavior, but the behavior does not involve ingestion of a substance.
Mm-hmm. But as with alcoholism, it can be passed on through generations.
Absolutely.
And there is some genetic component.
Absolutely. And if you look at those families, they're riddled with alcohol and drug abuse and antisocial behaviors.
Okay, Donald Black, fascinating. It's always good to have you in to update us on your research. Donald Black, professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. Thank you so much for coming in, Professor Black.
Thank you.
Coming up on Monday after the weekend, we'll discuss rape prevention here in Iowa. We'll examine the attitudes and opinions that need to change in order to make Iowa safer. Also on our program on Monday, we'll talk to the victim of an abduction and the creator of a new smartphone app which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. That's Monday on our program. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden and Emily Woodbury. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Catherine Perkins. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. We always welcome your comments and questions. RiverToRiver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.